So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Tara Kelly, no less, CEO of Splice Software. Hi, Tara. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. It's great to be here.
Thank you very much. So, Tara, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about the work that you do?
Absolutely. So I like to consider myself an accidental entrepreneur. I wrote my first program, software program, at 9 years old, probably just because that's what my dad was doing. So it's always has been part of my life, technology and dabbling. But I've always really loved customer experience and serving the customer and creating that exchange. So I've been running my own companies now for since 97, and just slowly working towards a journey. And today I'm founder and CEO of Splice Software. And we are 11 years old now, and that time just has whomped by. But we're really all about at Splice creating inspired customer connections and doing it by using data to create this data-driven dialogue that tells the person what they need when they need it. We focus specifically on insurance, retail, and finance. Mm-hmm. Probably could go up to other sectors, maybe will in the future. But we're really excited about helping people have the information they need when they need it and getting it to them in the right place at the right time.
Perfect. Now, Tara, and we were talking offline and just when we were setting up this conversation, and we were talking about this idea around, customer engagement and kind of personalization and how many companies are struggling to sort of get it right, sort of the level of personalization. Some are getting it wrong, some are just being a little bit creepy, and it's sort of trying to strike a mm-hmm. balance. I mean, are you seeing kind of the companies struggling with that sort of that idea about how do we get the balance right in terms of personalization?
Yeah, I think it's surprisingly challenging, and the spectrum of ways to do it wrong is actually like really big. So you can just send something very generic with no personalization, even though you know so much about that end customer. You're seeing organizations that are sometimes sending the wrong information because they're not understanding the household or the way individuals play into that household. And then you get people that just go way too far, and it's creepy. And go back 10 years to the Target story, and the gal that was pregnant and hadn't told her family, or look at something about where you're shopping, or you look at ads that pop up and you're like, God, that's awkward. I barely looked at that for a second, or the fact that your phone reads your text, right? So I think the interesting thing is in all of this, though, really, Adrian, is that you have an opportunity to remember. Mm-hmm. We're human, and sure. And there's humans that work at a company, and the person on the other end is human, and you can get it right. It is possible.
So how do you think companies can, one, help customers feel more comfortable with this idea of personalization, but also kind of this idea that in order to do that, to become, they want more personalized services, but they have to give out a degree of sort of data and understand the kind of the privacy dimensions of that. So what do you think companies can do to sort of manage, if you like, that engagement, that conversation around the personalization and privacy balance? Is it just they just need to be open and honest and upfront about what customers are getting into?
Yes. So I love it. It's, thank you for such an easy setup. But absolutely. No, I think the point is if you create a reasonable expectation, right? So with the end consumer as a company, if you let them know, if you create that transparency, it's something you're both expecting now, right?
Yeah.
So if I give you my cell phone number and I know that I gave it to you and then you use it, that isn't that odd, right? If I tell you that I'm planning a vacation to Ireland and then you send me some stuff about going to Ireland, that's not odd. So I think absolutely number one is bringing that conversation to the forefront. And when you think about the collection of data, many times it's coming in a transactional way or it's being purchased. And I think sometimes we forget that when they are our customer, we actually are already communicating with them. We could get data that's volunteered, mm-hmm. right? Or we could even confirm data data that we have inferred or purchased. And again, that data then becomes confirmed or volunteered. And when a customer freely gives it to you, it really takes awkward out of the equation. So number one, I think, is absolutely becoming more transparent in this process. But number two is, and this is the tenet also of all good human relationships, there has to be some value exchange, right?
Yeah.
If I tell you all these things, there has to be a reason we're in this relationship. And those communications should be relevant to the reason the relationship exists. So if you're just not clear at all on why your customer is your customer, you're going to have a really hard time doing that. But if you look at what and how and why they've engaged with you, that's really a really important place to start, because that's where the value exchange lies.
Okay.
So number one, get it transparent, get it out in the open. And number two is really focusing on that value exchange. Why are they choosing my brand? Why are they my customer?
And so the thing that kind of strikes me about that, though, because you talked about the Target example, which if if listeners don't remember that, it was when Target kind of did some data analysis and then sent some pregnancy or post-pregnancy sort of products to a customer before they'd actually kind of told that person, the pregnant lady, had actually told their family or their husband or their wife. Either their husband or the family kind of members
that she was
pregnant. So it kind of like, the thing that, if we step back, the thing that it seems to me that we're talking about is we're talking about context, right? But then it seems to me that there's this desire to apply sort of technology to all of this, to try and kind of automate it. And to apply algorithms and analytics to it to try and get it right, make it kind of easy. So, but that seems to me like a real challenge. It's almost like, because in many ways, you talk about this sort of putting the human kind of touch in it, but there's the human and the context kind of element. But can we always kind of automate that? Or is that going to just be, we just have to almost like test about what works and what doesn't work? I mean, it just seems to be a real challenge.
Yeah. So I think there's two parts to that question. The one thing that I want to come back to too in what you're saying is you're saying the importance of context, and I agree 100%. And then I think there's also the factor of privilege and the privilege of owning that information.
Right.
And everybody wants to be treated as an individual. We all fully believe in our own uniqueness. And the more accurately we can understand and perceive the individual's uniqueness, the greater the ability to service their needs. And that's where computers start to get really handy. Because if you have millions of customers, or even hundreds of thousands, frankly, even tens of thousands, do you remember tens of thousands of people's birthdays? Like, let's just pick an easy one, right? Yeah, so now we enter the machine, right? Enter the database. And now we take that and we add it to, you know, hundreds or tens and additional fields about what product did you purchase? What did you look at? What do you like? And this is a really beautiful opportunity to start to perceive needs based on patterning. And so you get into the big data story and you get into some of the AI. And I think all of our customers want to have the opportunity to be treated as an individual and have our needs truly serviced.
Mm-hmm.
And organizations are sort of subsetting them into groups and creating those rule sets. So I think that we would be absolutely crazy to think that we're going to go into the future and you're not going to be seeing big data playing a really big role, in marketing. And I think that's perfectly okay. But what we have to remember is we can't take that data and just let it flow right through directly. We need to create that connection piece in the middle. And so you're looking towards software and I won't make this a pitch, but it's why I show up at work, is how do you take data and truly create a data-driven dialogue that's still fully personalized and humanized,
right?
And those last two steps, that's where the magic is, because there's a lot of great companies out there that collect a ton of great data, but you have to create a connection for it to add value. And I think that's the part where it gets tough, is just adding that extra step of saying, okay, great, I know you and your family, Adrian, want to go to Ireland this, you know, summer, and make this part of this, and you really want to go to the Guinness, you know, factory and this and that. And that's wonderful. And I can know that and I can market to you that way, but it's important that I don't create some sort of an odd recommendation based on, you know, the way that you could create your hotel room setup or you're this or you're that. So it's really important to remember that it's a person you're reaching on the other end. It's not a computer, mm-hmm. and you're not going to get a bunch of points just because you know a bunch of extra data about somebody.
Yeah. And so as you were talking then, it just sort of occurred to me is that this idea that personalization is kind of one of those kind of words that people talk about freely, and you know, in you know, as commentators or writers or as you know, entrepreneurs or as executives, kind of whoever. But do you think there's possibly a need for people before they even embark on this on this type of personalization journey is actually to step back and say, well, what does actually personalization mean to our customers and the different groups of our customers? Because does that not then make it a bounded thing, and then it might actually prevent us from being sort of creepy? So then we can almost, like, as you kind of said rightly earlier on, is you can actually then define what the value exchange is by actually defining what personalization mm-hmm. means for different groups of customers.
Yeah, so I think that's a really important part you're hitting on, and defining what is personalization for them, not for us. And yeah. So that's where you're looking to, you know, have that moment to do something where you're really doing inspired work yeah. and you're really doing purpose-driven work. Mm-hmm. And I think, unfortunately, what's happening right now is we are actually just looking at, hey, which data columns do I have and which one is the most, you know, complete, right? Yeah. Has the most fields that are complete in it. Let's use that, right? And it's sort of like when you show up in your kitchen and you're trying to make dinner and you just make dinner based on what's in the fridge or the cupboard. Yeah. Sometimes it turns into a masterpiece, but most of the time not, right? Most of the time it's quite a different experience. If you say, you know, tonight I want to do a beautiful Italian pasta, and you stop at the market and you get a sausage and you get some bread and you, right? There's a different experience that comes because it was an inspired, purpose-driven activity. And I think that we need inspired, purpose-driven marketing. And that definitely comes back to defining what is personalization mean to this group. So if I'm taking my car in to be serviced or just, you know, winterized or just a checkup, I want you to know what oil I put in last time on the file, right? I want you to know what kind of car I have. I want you to know some of that history. And so in that case, those are things I expect from you. And that's really why. Wonderful. So personalization actually means using all of that. I'm not really impressed if I have to tell you that information all over again. And frankly, I probably don't even know it. But when I go into a department store, I don't need you to tell me that I just brought, you know, control top nylons last time I was in. That doesn't make me feel better. But I did want to know that that's the oil I used. Right? And so they could, though. They could do that. That would be possible. And I use that as an example because I think anybody hearing it can go like, oh, yeah. Right?
Yeah, sure.
And so it has to be purpose driven.
Okay. And so what would you say from your experience? I mean, so there's two things I want to ask you about. One is this, like, a general sort of almost like set of, you know, advice around kind of tips about to companies that what they should be thinking about to enable them to walk this balance between being helpful and creepy when they're trying to achieve personalization. I mean, what would you say to them? What tips would you give them?
So I think the first tip is every time you bring in a piece of data that you're using to personalize it, ask the question, how will the customer feel? What do I want them to do because of this?
Right.
And if it's not clear, don't use it, because then you're just trying to show off what data you have without purpose.
Yeah.
I think that's the number one.
Uh-huh.
I think number two is, start building a database architecture that allows you to know the difference of data that was volunteered by the customer themselves versus purchased.
Right.
It's like an awareness indicator. Do we both know that I know this about you? Right?
Yeah.
You could get into psychology on that and Jahari's blind window and other things, and I won't, but create a database field and tag mapping system that allows the marketing team to know which parts of this data were volunteered, and I am saying it again, but I can't stress that one enough, and which ones have been either purchased or acquired potentially without the customer's knowledge through their transactions. And I think if you just do those two things, and then as the last one is, always know what your end purpose is, right? What is my absolute best journey the customer could take because of this? And is this personalization making that journey better? Because really, they're always on a journey with your brand.
Yeah.
And if the journey is great, they're going to do that journey with you again. And that's when you start to get into really owning the wallet share of that consumer, and in a really nice way.
Excellent. Your first tip reminds me of this. I had a conversation with Mozilla's chief marketing officer, Yasha Kekas-Wolf, the other week. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned an idea of, he said, rather than big data, he said he wanted people to start talking less about big data and actually talking about lean data. The idea being mm-hmm. that you should only collect data that you're going to use, and you should discard everything else. Because if you discard it, then you're actually going through the process, as you're kind of saying, of considering what I've got and what I'm going to do with it, and why I'm doing it, and if I've got permission to do it. Because otherwise, if you've got it, if you've just got other data, then it's like it almost like could possibly promote wrong action, or you just mm-hmm. become lazy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I love that. I did a webinar. It's still on our website, like 3.5 years ago. And it was on, I called it small data. I actually love this lean data, and I'll have to reach out to him and talk about it. But I'd say small data is the data that's volunteered, and lean data is the idea of cleaning it. But I always would use the phrase, you should give your data a sniff check. Data goes bad. Lots of data has an expiry point, right? And I think we haven't built database warehouses and structures to look at that. It's sort of like this race to see how much data can we collect, and it's not all created equal. So all data is not created equal.
Sure.
And data has an expiry date.
Yeah.
And when's the last time you gave your data a sniff check? I actually have a real story, and we'll leave names out of it, but they purchased data and overrode data that had come in from their stores that was less than a week old. So they actually took data that they bought, and it was a month old, and they overrode data that was a week old. And they had nothing in their architecture or structure or process that would have ever stopped that from happening.
Wow. That's...
And I got to ask, how many people have those processes? I don't think as many as we'd like to believe.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what, Tara, I mean, let's kind of, rather than actually kind of poking holes at data initiatives, can you give us, let's kind of like raise the level of optimism, and can you give us some examples of
sure.
of some clients that you think are you've been working with, you think, actually, here's what they're doing, and this is cool because they're doing X and Y with it and achieving kind of, A and B kind of results of it, because it sort of brings that whole, this whole sort of theoretical and possibly abstract discussion to life.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, awesome. Absolutely. I am super hopeful, because I think at the end of the day, as individuals, we know how to treat each other well and take care of each other. We can do this. We just need some new processes. So here's a really simple example. And I think there's nothing wrong with starting, starting at the beginning, walking before you run. Mm-hmm. Lazy Boy is one of our customers, and a really great brand that's been around for a long time, and it's helping people understand that, they're more than just a recliner. Right?
Lazy Boy chairs.
We can do apartments. We can do small rooms.
Okay.
And so for Lazy Boy, one of the programs that we put together for them was first to recognize their customers by their first name
mm-hmm.
and by the preferred store that they're shopping at. Not based on geographical location, not based on place of last purchase, but place on multiple purchases or actually asking them. And
right.
so if they haven't confirmed where it is, we're taking an average of where they shop most. And it's interesting to find. Sometimes it's on, probably, we're going to guess, on their way home from work or maybe from their kid's school, but it's not actually always right by their house. So first of all, they took an element of personalization to target which store on a mixture of both, given data as well as inferred from a knowledge base.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went further, but to recognize their customers that participate in their loyalty program with special gifts.
Right.
And the gift was based on what that customer had purchased and then other factors about their geographic region. And so some people are getting these beautiful wine glasses. Some people are getting grill sets, and it would vary. It would vary with the time of year. It would vary based on who that customer was, and it would also be with an awareness of what gift they received previously.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it had been a couple of years and they had previously had a wine glass set, they would introduce another wine glass set, because we all know they break sometimes.
Yeah.
yet they wouldn't do it right away immediately after. And so that's simple, and it's easy, but when you go back to the 1-2-3 that we talked about before, it has all of those things in it, mm-hmm. right? The purpose was to let them know they were valued and unique. The desire was to make that connection and to use both implied and inferred data. And the purpose was that they had something very practical and useful in their home that they actually would use. So if the person is unlikely to use it, that wouldn't have that same value. But every time they flipped that burger, they thought about Lazy Boy. Or every time they, you know, had that sip of wine, or someone says, oh, these glasses are beautiful, they tell their friend about Lazy Boy. So the purpose for Lazy Boy was that their name and their brand would feel good in that customer's life.
Yeah.
Right.
And
it worked out really beautifully.
And what Lazy Boy has seen, kind of good business results from that?
Pretty amazing. Absolutely. They've won a couple awards for this program, actually, through Retail Touchpoints, operational and customer experience excellence. And I won't talk to their numbers, but okay. Yes, it's their financial. It's been an amazing program for them and a huge ROI. Looking at the buying, we're seeing statistically opted-in customers that have chosen to stay connected and invited you to communicate with them more actually are seeing on average will have 50% higher average tickets. Now, these stats are specific for retailers.
Yeah.
But if a customer opts in and has stayed in your loyalty program and is seeing that value, the average ticket is 50% higher than people that aren't. And you look at, you know, should I invest in this program? Should I, you know, go to the effort of getting my data cleaned up a little bit more? And I'm going to say, guys, like, yes, yes, and yes. And the numbers are going to pay for themselves. You know, the program's going to pay for itself faster than you think. So that's a great story. Another favorite of mine is, if I can, do we have time for one more?
Yeah, of course.
I don't know how we're doing on that. But
yeah, please do.
Sure. So in an insurance company, and you look at somebody like a AAA, another one of our customers, or a Germania is doing a really great job of warning people. I'll pick on that one too for a second, but warning people of catastrophic events in their area. And that's a great level of personalization where we're bringing in different data points from different areas to make sure that they're keeping that policyholder safe. A great idea. So one of the other stories that I was going to talk about was automobile, and you look at, you know, car accidents, and, you know, they're prevalent and it happens, and you take your vehicle in to get fixed, and odds are it might be ready on time, it might not, it might be a 50-50 shot. So you want to know, can I keep this rental car longer, right? That's really important.
Yeah.
And you don't want to have to call your insurance company, plus your, you know, your car rental place, plus maybe the individual that sold it, maybe even your broker. Like, this gets complicated. Your adjuster, why not just get a quick message out to that customer recognizing, hey, Tara, we're calling about your recent accident. Your Mercedes is not going to be ready for pickup, but you're welcome to keep the rental car till Monday. Great.
Yep.
You know, it's Monday morning, and that's one more thing I don't have to do. And the beautiful thing about that is you've got data coming in from 3 or 4 different places, but really it didn't feel creepy that you know what car I drive. I'm not weirded out, right, that you knew my rental car was supposed to be back already. I know that you know.
Yeah.
And I'm thrilled that you took the time to use that data to make my life easier. And that goes right to the heart of the value exchange, right? Give me something that I actually want and I need to know. Take care of me. And we're going to have a beautiful, long relationship. I'm going to be telling people, hey, you know, your spouse is going to come home, your friends, you're like, ah, no, I'm not worried. I got the rental car till Monday. Oh, you got a hold of them? No, they called me.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. But it comes back to that, you know, that idea about sort of almost imagining what is kind of personalization kind of mean for different groups of customers, and then almost aspiring to deliver kind of that rather than just making big assumptions. Because it's always that, it always seems to me that kind of we always get caught out by assumptions. Assumptions are our assumptions that we make are pretty much the root of most of the problems I think that we face.
Oh, I think you're probably onto a massive thing there, right? Like, I think that one is probably true in every aspect of our lives.
Yeah.
Assumptions are terrible. And especially when we try to do it en masse and we look at, you know, marketing automation today, it's so automated. You just can't put those kind of assumptions in the system. You have to leave room, for purpose-driven communications and really exploring what can I do that is truly of value to my customer, and then saying, okay, well, what things do I need to know? And so if you go back to that car example, I love that because, right, I need to know if they have a rental car, first of all, because that would be mean. Tell them they can keep a car they don't have, right? Yeah. And you can see that. That could happen. I need to know if their car is going to be ready. I need to know what kind of vehicle this is for. There's a few points. And once I know that, then that's very different. I can go to my data source and say, okay, these are the elements I need to know to create this value exchange. Are they accessible? Do I have them? Right? And that's a much better way to look at it than looking at your data and going, wow, I've got all this data. Let's see what cool things I can slice, dice, and do. It's just a little different.
Excellent.
I guess it's beginning with the end in mind. If we were to sum it all up with one thing, you really just begin with the end in mind.
It's kind of old. It's old wisdom.
Yes. Yes.
Sometimes we're not very good at learning the lessons of the past.
Right. Well, we're anxious to learn new things, and I think that it's always a balancing act of keeping those things that were old and true and still working brilliantly, and not just trading them in for something new and shiny, but evolving them into what is our world today. And it's not that easy, right? A day when you used to have a single storefront, whether you were, you know, selling insurance or tires or dresses or whatever it is, or banking services, somebody walked in and you knew them because they lived in your small community and you recognized their face and you could meet their needs because you remembered it. And now I think that, you know, human being brain is a database somewhere. But we still have to remember we're humans selling to humans. We're humans talking to humans, and we've got to make sure it feels like that.
Perfect. So Tara, there's some great stuff in there, and we've got talked about personalization and also just some, you know, some advice and tips and some also kind of like different approaches from different kind of companies, and that's, you know, fascinating. You're right in the middle, in the thick of it with Splice Software, but what's the sort of the big next big thing for you guys in terms of trying to advance this kind of effort, as it were?
Yeah. I really think that the connected home, we're having billions of devices, connected devices being sold into the home. And with a recent announcement too, now Apple is joining the party, right? Of course they are. But with Google Home and with Amazon's Alexa voice, speaker, with Samsung announcing that Alexa is going to be in every two-way speaker, so you can talk to all these devices in your home. You could talk to your fridge. Ford is putting it in all of the new cars. I think the really exciting new thing is that, so just to create the contrast, you know, today we're sort of back at our desks and working with companies to help them plan these outbound marketing campaigns or inbound on web. Yeah. We sort of have these few places where we're going to interact. And I think what's happening now is the party is everywhere.
Right.
It's everywhere. And so with the connected home, that customer needs to reach you where they are, whenever, and you need to know all those pieces. And it's a really, really wonderful time to just be there for them when they need you. I think for a couple of years, we've been talking now about the micro moment and being there in that micro moment for your customer when they need you the most. And I think IoT is really creating that opportunity. So at Splice, we recently launched any of the dialogues we support in voice and call and phone and text can also be supported through Google Home and an Alexa, which of course is Dot as well. And soon we'll be looking here at the Apple product. But it's really exciting that you could come home from work and be, you know, yelling at your kid to get ready for soccer, chopping your onions, and say like, hey, Alexa, is my car ready for pickup? Yeah. Oh, gosh, that's so great. So we just launched that at a recent conference for insurance and just had such great response because you just got to be where your customer is. And I'm excited about that because we're going to be able to know what is new and fresh information because the customer is giving it to you all the time, everywhere. And it's going to be awesome because you can really do a great job taking care of that customer.
Fantastic. So just kind of keeping an eye on time, kind of Tara, I mean, is there anything else that that you think we've missed out that you'd like to highlight around this kind of personalization and not being creepy sort of, idea that we've missed out that you'd like to mention before I ask you my two final questions?
Sure. I think the last, piece that I just want to always echo, and, you can talk about some horror stories, but I think I want to remind businesses that you do know how to do this. It's in your DNA. If you have, a few great personal relationships, you have the core skills required to be a great marketer with your customers. And if you start with the end in mind, this is, you can do this. It's very doable. It's in reach right now, today. And we don't need to overthink it.
Perfect. Now, my penultimate question is related to, it's a bit of a sort of selfish personal market research type of thing, because I wrote a book last year called How to Wow. It was published by Pearson. And so what I've been doing ever since it got published is asking people for their personal perspective on what Wow service or Wow experience is to them. So I'd be really interested to get your take on that.
Yeah, so for me, there's probably a few stories, and just for time, I think Wow service is being there when you need something, just before I ask for it, not like way before I'm ready for it, but just before I ask for it,
okay.
And simply and seamlessly bouncing right back out. You don't want these overblown, bloated relationships. So really perceiving your needs and being there when you need them and bouncing right back out when you're done. And you know what I think, probably is a good brand that does a really nice job of it is actually Starwood Loyalty Program.
Okay.
They have a really lovely way of getting you information just at the time you want it. And they use a lot of different data to do that.
Fantastic. Thank you. And this brings me to my last question that I always ask at the end of these interviews. And the question is this: Tara, is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Of course. Yes. Thank you for asking that question. I would shamelessly plug gaining consent to reach your customer and getting that data. We have an amazing tool that helps you visualize. And we have a phenomenal mobile app that goes with it called Leaderboard that helps gamify the collection of permissions and consents. And that no matter how much data you have, if you don't have that permission and consent to be using it, it's always going to be awkward. So the Dialogue Controller, recently winning a finalist in the Cody Awards, we're up to find out. So really, yeah, I would shamelessly plug that this is easy. It's all API driven. Whether you do your communications with us and they're beautifully inspired or they're not, please look at the Dialogue Controller and the Leaderboard, which really gamifies the collection of that personal data, and it really plays into that small data or lean data, as was said earlier.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
And that's that. We can find that at kind of Splice Software under Dialogue Controller.
Absolutely. You can find that at splicesoftware.com under Dialogue Controller. There's a great video. There's some webinars, case study you can download. If you're interested in figuring out how to raise your average ticket 50% higher with opted in, this is how you do it. So some pretty big ROI there.
Awesome. Thank you, Kantar. And good luck on the Curdy Awards. I hope you kind of you land all of them and go for a clean sweep. That would be amazing.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the taking a lead in this kind of personalization sort of conversation that many kind of companies are wrestling with. But lastly, thank you for your time today and sharing your insights and your experience today. That's been great.
No, wonderful. Thank you, Adrian. It was a privilege. It's an exciting topic, and I care about it a lot. So always good to help people realize it's doable, and it was fun.